I will open up the Senate Committee on Business and Transportation for, yes, April 1st, 2009. We're in another month. And if you're here for the Popeye bill, Senate Bill 674, olive oil, that was not being heard today. So that has been pulled from the schedule for today. So I just wanted to let you know. Now I'm going to open up a public hearing and possible work session on SJR 8. Mr. Stembridge.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, SJR 8 names the Aurora State Airport for West La Mata.
Thank you. I'd like to ask Dan Sweet, Dick Clark, and Mark Gibson to come forward, please. Welcome, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Good afternoon.
Whoever would like to begin.
If you don't mind, I'll begin.
Okay.
Good afternoon, Chairman Metzger, Senator Vice Chairman Starr, and members of the committee. My name is Dan Sweet. I am here this afternoon as a representative of Columbia Helicopters and the requester of the bill, or the measure, Oregon Senate Joint Resolution 8, to name the Aurora State Airport in honor of West La Mata. I have prepared a short PowerPoint presentation, if that's okay.
Yeah.
I'd like to begin by telling you a little bit about West La Mata and his company. Wes was working as a longshoreman and a truck driver in the 1950s when he heard that there was a demand for helicopter pilots. He used his World War II GI benefits to learn to fly helicopters from another Oregon pioneer, Dean Johnson. In 1957, he convinced his brother Ed to finance his first helicopter. Ed's the person actually seated in the aircraft. He named his company Columbia Helicopters, a plural, despite only owning one helicopter at the time. Eventually, all four of the La Mata brothers worked with Wes's company. Wes's early days involved selling rides at county fairs and from street corners on weekends. Wes's brothers helped out by selling tickets and refueling the aircraft. To Wes, promoting helicopters was a method of promoting the future. He really saw a great vision for helicopter operations. In September of 1957, Wes was flying a colonel from the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers along the Oregon coast, inspecting dredges. And near Coos Bay, they noticed that one of the Corps' dredges had been struck by a freighter and was actually sinking with men still on board. Wes made repeated trips back and forth to the ship, encouraging sailors to climb out onto the skid of the helicopter. He saved 15 sailors that day, a record for a single-handed life-saving operation. The lower photo appeared in Life magazine. Because of the publicity, he was awarded the Army Air Medal for the rescue, and he used the publicity to help his company grow. Meanwhile, he continued to do anything that he could to promote helicopter operations in Oregon. He was selling rides, he was carrying reporters to remote news stories, carrying circus acts, and teaching others to fly. And in honor of our sesquicentennial this year, in 1959, Wes and his brothers flew passengers at the Oregon Centennial Celebration in Portland, and a five-minute ride cost $3.50. In 1960, Wes made another significant contribution to the helicopter industry as a whole. Early use of construction with helicopters involved men on the ground radioing instructions to the pilot, telling him where to place the load. Wes believed that there was a better method and switched to a seat inside the aircraft that had a second set of flight controls. This allowed him to look directly down on the load to see how it needed to be flown and where it needed to be placed. The first test of this system involved setting power poles and pulling power wire in the Columbia River Gorge near the Dalles Dam. Direct Visual Operational Control, or DVOC, is now an industry standard. In 1962, Wes moved his company to the brand new Portland Heliport on Swan Island. As the company grew, he continued to fill it with a variety of aircraft, and he also began to sell helicopters in the Portland area. Wes had always been interested in the external applications of helicopters, though, more than just carrying passengers. But he needed bigger helicopters with a higher lifting capacity to meet the demands of the work he intended. He created the heavy lift helicopter industry when he purchased a Sikorsky S-61 in 1967, the first big helicopter. Prior to that, any time a big helicopter was purchased, it was used for carrying passengers only. Wes was using it to install power line towers, and he also developed one of the first helicopter firefighting systems. In 1969, Wes bought the first three of the tandem rotor helicopters for which the company is now well known. These aircraft were the first of what would eventually become the largest privately held fleet of heavy-lift helicopters anywhere in the world, a fleet exceeded today by only some of the world's militaries. In 69, Wes also pioneered the concept of successful helicopter logging in southern Oregon. He had examined the process in the early 1960s, but again felt that he needed a big helicopter for Oregon's big timber. In part because Oregon or Wes developed helicopter logging in Oregon, other similar companies soon followed Wes's path. Today, Oregon is home to several of the largest heavy-lift helicopter companies in the world. In 1976, Columbia Helicopters outgrew the Portland heliport at Swan Island and moved to its present location at the Aurora State Airport. Today, the company that Wes started with a single small helicopter in Gresham, Oregon, is now the world leader in heavy-lift helicopter operations. Currently, the company has aircraft working in the United States, Canada, Peru, and Papua New Guinea, but the company has also previously worked in Sudan, Saudi Arabia, Ecuador, Chile, Malaysia, Laos, New Zealand, and Australia. The company is truly a global operation operating from a very small place in Oregon. The company's headquarters are also the site of Columbia's world-class maintenance facility. In addition to working on our own aircraft, Wes's company also works on military aircraft and components, as well as routine maintenance for non-military customers. Wes's company now boasts over 700 employees around the world, about 350 of whom are at Aurora. Most are highly skilled, and it makes the company the largest single employer on the airport. Wes's company has generated in excess of $100 million in revenue for many years. It also creates over $40 million in annual payroll, much of which flows through the state of Oregon. Wes started his company in Oregon, and it has always been an Oregon-based company. This year, as we celebrate Oregon's 150th birthday, I feel that it's important that we recognize that there are still pioneers among us whose contributions are as significant to the state as those who helped establish our state a century and a half ago. Wes LaMotta is one of those pioneers, and I ask you to support Senate Joint Measure 8 to honor Wes LaMotta and the state of Oregon. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Sweet, and I would say that the $3.50 ride in Mr. LaMotta's helicopter 40 years ago would not... want to know the cost of a ride in the Chinook helicopter for the appropriate amount of time now, because I have a hint at how much that is. So I know how much. It has grown. Well, thank you very much. I think before we go to questions, we'll go to our next guest.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Senator Metzger and the rest of the committee. My name is Dick Clark. I'm Executive Director of the Providence St. Vincent Medical Foundation and immediate past president of the Rotary Club of Portland. But today I'm also wearing a hat as a lifelong Oregonian who has been involved in philanthropy for more than 30 years. And it's my honor to tell you a little bit about Wes LaMotta and his consistent leadership role in making a difference in the lives of many residents of Oregon and Southwest Washington. Simply stated, Wes LaMotta is a citizen of this community who hears about needs of others and responds generously. He doesn't offer his philanthropic support because he wants public attention. He doesn't seek financial benefit or political favor for his giving. I believe Wes LaMotta shares his personal and financial resources because he has experienced challenging times and can relate to the plight and needs of others. Wes grew up in the Depression of the 1930s when the ill winds of the Dust Bowl forced his family to flee North Dakota and relocate to Brush Prairie, Washington. He put his own life at risk serving in the U.S. Army in the Philippines during World War II. He started his helicopter business, as Dan explained, with a loan, a lot of sacrifice, personal risk, and hard work. And because of his tenacity and his life values, his business grew into a worldwide industry leader. Along the way, Wes always gave back to the community, especially supporting those who were most poor and vulnerable. His philanthropy is diverse. It touches lives throughout Oregon and Southwest Washington. And his giving usually starts when a friend expresses a need and asks for his support. He gives quietly and without fanfare. The Lamont, for example, Wes and his wife Nancy have supported a local children's hospital program offering medical care for babies with brain tumors. The Lamontas have endowed a professorship at Oregon State University School of Forestry and also provide scholarships for deserving students. In the Portland area, they have supported a domestic violence shelter for homeless women and children, and another nonprofit that serves the emotionally distressed. Wes and Nancy offer financial assistance to a program in Pendleton, Oregon, which supports outreach programs for mentally disabled children. Their giving can be very personal. Wes and his family have been touched by cancer over and over. Wes himself is a 5-time cancer survivor, and he lost one of his daughters to cancer in 2005. Wes and his family want to find a cure for cancer so others won't suffer as they have. To that end, Wes and Nancy generously support cancer research. They also have supported patient and family education to those facing cancer so that they can be more empowered. Wes understands the importance of preparing the next generation to follow in our footsteps. Nancy and Wes join the I Have a Dream educational program in Southwest Washington in 1997. As sponsors with 4 other couples, they funded counselors to work with a class of 75 local fourth graders at a school in an at-risk neighborhood. The impact has been immediate and amazing. 90% of the sponsored students graduated from high school. More than half of those students are now attending college and receiving tuition assistance from the Lamadas and the other sponsors. Several will receive their college degrees this year. The Lamadas have since sponsored a second class, which has experienced the same successful results. And here's an excerpt from a letter of thanks from one of those students. I quote, "I'm writing to you, well, because I feel it's long overdue. I attend Berklee College of Music, a state-of-the-art contemporary music school located in Boston, Massachusetts. The major I'm enrolled in is music synthesis. It's claimed to be one of the most difficult majors, and believe me, when you have 3 weeks to emulate an 80-piece orchestra incorporating nothing but a keyboard and a mouse, it's quite an experience. I'm only able to do this because of the generous support of my parents, my peers, and most of all, you, my I Have the Dream sponsors. I thank you for your belief in all of the. I thank you for your belief in all of us in the I Have a Dream program, and for your continued support toward our ambitions. You have made at least this student's dream a reality." That is what Wes LaMotta and his family do. They make dreams come true for those most in need. Through all of his philanthropic outreach, the LaMottas have touched and helped thousands of Oregonians. As fellow citizens of this community, we are fortunate to have Wes LaMotta as one of our leaders. He doesn't seek this recognition, but he deserves it. Thank you for the opportunity to speak to you today about an outstanding leader, Wes LaMotta.
Thank you, Mr. Clark. And just for a real brief moment before I go on to Mr. Gibson, since you're with the St. Vincent Medical Foundation, why don't you just tell us briefly about your involvement with Mr. LaMotta at the foundation?
For the last 6 years, I've been associated with the LaMotta family as they've helped support cancer research at Providence Cancer Center.
Okay, thank you. Welcome, Mr. Gibson.
Chair Metzger and members of the committee, I would first like to thank you all for the opportunity to speak before you here today. My name is Mark Gibson. I'm General Manager of Aircraft Operations at Timberland Logging, one of a large number of helicopter companies based in the state of Oregon. I'm also President of Siskiyou Transportation. Both operations are based in Ashland, Oregon. Additionally, I serve as Chairman of the Board of Directors of the Oregon Trucking Association, as well as serving as the current Vice Chairman, Chairman-elect of the Helicopter Association International, a trade association representing helicopter operators, manufacturers, and other supporting entities worldwide. It is indeed an honor to testify in support of the resolution to name the Aurora State Airport as Wes LaMotta Field at Aurora State Airport. Throughout my years in the helicopter industry, the trucking industry, and the timber industry, I have always personally looked up to, Columbia Helicopters. West LaMotta and Columbia Helicopters are a prime example of the American ingenuity and determination that have made this country great. From humble beginnings in 1957 to their current standing as the largest heavy lift helicopter company in the world, West LaMotta and Columbia Helicopters have always been at the forefront of the industry through innovation, professionalism, and ingenuity. The first time I met Mr. LaMotta was at an HAI function. We were seated at a table together with several other individuals. Wes was beginning telling stories about his years in the industry. I didn't recognize him at first, and it wasn't until later that someone mentioned what company he was with. I couldn't have imagined a more comfortable, easy-to-talk-to individual. One of his more famous selfish accomplishments was the rescue of 15 seamen, as Dan mentioned, from a sinking dredge off Coos Bay, Oregon, followed by countless accomplishments to date. The helicopter vertical lift industry owes credit to Mr. LaMotta and Columbia for many industry contributions. One of the first, and arguably one of the most important, is that of the direct visual operational control, DVOC. This technique is used to perform external load operations suspended from a long line attached to the bottom of the helicopter. This technique was first developed by Wes in 1960 and later became key in Columbia's first proving the feasibility of helicopter logging operations. In 1971 and subsequently, their pioneering of oil rig movements, power line and ski lift construction, rooftop placement of construction equipment. They were the first to fly linemen hovering over energized power lines in external baskets. Firefighting and an endless array of functions performed today by the helicopter aerial crane industry. Columbia further enhanced the DVOC technique through the innovation of the bubble window, allowing the pilot to lean out to view the load below without removing the aircraft door. Columbia Helicopters' achievements don't end with external load milestones. In 1985, Columbia flew three BV-107 helicopters for 100 days straight in support of disaster assistance and famine relief in Sudan, helping to deliver millions of pounds of food and medicine. Columbia Helicopters has achieved countless milestones in terms of numbers of hours flown in twin rotor helicopters. In 1988, Columbia Helicopters modified the Boeing 234 Chinook helicopter, allowing it the ability to be the only helicopter capable of lifting and transporting 125% of its own weight. West LaMotta and Columbia Helicopters have received numerous industry awards, including Wes's receiving the American Helicopter Society's Captain William J. Kossler Award for two consecutive years. This award recognizes the greatest achievements in the practical application or operation of the helicopter. In 1995, Wes received the Pathfinder Award given by the Boeing Museum of Flight in Seattle. The award recognizes those individuals who have made significant contributions to flight in the northwestern part of the United States. Wes LaMotta received HAI's Lawrence D. Bell Memorial Award for helicopter management leadership, as well as being awarded HAI's Honorary Life Membership Award. In addition to Mr. LaMotta's awards, Columbia Helicopters and numerous employees have received several of the Helicopter Association International's awards through HAI's annual Salute to Excellence Awards ceremony. I could go on and on with the many contributions, some acknowledged and many not, that Mr. Wes LaMotta and Columbia Helicopters have made to the industry as well as the community. I urge your support and subsequent passage of SJR 8 in going a short distance in helping to recognize those many contributions through the simple renaming of the Aurora State Airport. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Gibson. Questions from any of our guests?
Mr. Chair,
yes,
I don't
Senator
have a question, but I'd just like to make a statement. I don't know Mr. LaMotta, but thank you for bringing this story. That is a wonderful American story as well as an Oregon story, so thank you for that.
Thank you, Senator Schrader.
I would just like to mention I've had a tour of your facility, been there many times. I know that the company is a member of the Pacific Northwest Defense Coalition, which is a group that was actually incubated in Clackamas County and now is a regional and statewide organization, and I know that we couldn't have gotten there without the company's help and support. It's a wonderful facility, and in my past life as a commissioner, when I was taking the time to visit companies and tour their facilities, I have to say that the tour I had at Columbia was one of the most interesting opportunities I had. So thank you for that.
Thank you.
Thank you, gentlemen. Mr. Leal.
Chairman Metzger, members of the Senate Committee, I'm here on behalf of the Positive Aurora Airport Management Incorporated, which in a way is kind of the neighborhood association for the Aurora Airport. We're a coalition of pilots, businesses, neighbors, and local community representatives, and we had the opportunity to discuss SJR 8 on the March 26th meeting. And we'd like to give our resounding, overwhelming yes recommendation to this committee today to pass SJR 8. Wes LaMotta is a pioneer. He's done a great deal for the state of Oregon, for aviation, and frankly for our community. You can see there on line 13 of the bill, it says, whereas Columbia Helicopters is the largest year-round employer in the Aurora community. In a way, that's a very modest statement. He's done much more just for Aurora, but for many other communities around Oregon. He's been a great neighbor for those of us who live around the airport and work with the airport, and we give our wholehearted endorsement for you today to pass out SJR 8 with a due pass recommendation on behalf of PAM.
Thank you, Mr. Leal. Any questions for Mr. Leal? Thank you.
Great. Thank
Mr. Clem is in the audience. Would you like to testify, or if you have any comments, the Director of Aviation?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Dan Clem, Director of Oregon Department of Aviation. Well, the department, the Oregon Aviation Board did not take a position on this joint resolution. Members of the board and the department are in support of the resolution. The naming process is a fairly simple one. Concerns were raised that it would change the codes in the pilots and aircraft navigation systems, and I'm here to resoundingly I indicate that it will not. Pilots can still register to Aurora without any problems at all. There are a number of airports. Salem Airport is one. It's the Salem Airport, but it is also known as McNary Field. So this naming of this field, in addition to Aurora State Airport, is consistent with airport management practices throughout the country. So with that, we see no problem associated with fiscal impact or any other issues.
Thank you, Mr. Clem. Any questions for Mr. Clem? Okay, thank you. Anyone else wishing to testify in Senate Joint Resolution 8? If not, we'll close the public hearing and open the work session on Senate Joint Resolution 8.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Starr.
I move SJR 8 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Starr. Senator Starr has moved that we adopt Senate Joint Resolution 8 with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered, and I will carry that. Thank you for coming for this. We're headed to the floor. Okay. Close the work session on SJR 8 and open a public hearing on Senate Bill 623. Mr. Stembridge.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Senate Bill 623 directs the Public Utilities Commission to allow higher water rates for metered water systems serving fewer than 500 customers to encourage metered water systems.
Okay, and we have Mel Olson. Welcome.
Thank you. Bear with me.
That's okay.
Chair Metzger and members of the Senate Business and Transportation Committee. Good afternoon. My name is Mel Olson. I am owner-operator of Highland Water Corporation located in St. Helens, Oregon. I want to thank you for taking time out of the committee's busy schedule to hear Senate Bill 623 today. I would like to thank Senator Betsy Johnson for introducing the bill at my request. The current rules and regulations from the Public Utility Commission have a threshold set at which companies may charge for water use, and customers may not protest the price, which is $33 per month that a company can charge for water service. This is the present setup. There are no cost differences whether it's a metered or a flat rate system. A flat rate is where it's not metered. People just hook up to the water system. They receive water service. The commission does regulate service if there's discrepancies in water service. This is taken into account by the commission. But as far as the price that is charged, it is $33. It doesn't matter whether it's metered or not metered. The same ceiling applies. This bill is for the commission to make a difference between non-metered water and metered water. And so I've listed different expenses that a metered water system has that a flat rate system does not have these expenses. The first one is the installation of the meters, and right along with the installation of a mechanical device, you have repairs and upkeep. And I noted that recently I was involved with a meter changing. It cost the company about $400 in parts and equipment just to replace one meter. So this is a significant expense to the company. When we're looking at small operations, it says less than 500. Many of these companies are less than 100. So if you're charging $33 a month, you can see how the math comes. A $400 expense is rather significant. Another part of, you have the calculation of the water usage. A meter reader has to be hired to go out and read the meters. This is all in fairness to the customers that it's properly measured to them. The other part of this bill is with the fairness, a customer who is using more water will pay a larger water bill, and consequently when pump repairs or other maintenance matters come up, the one that uses the most pays the most, and so the person that's being careful and conservative does not have to pay they're paying a proportion of the expenses, which is proper. And so this is why I feel that this bill is being more fair to the people that are using the water versus the flat rate. Now, if the company does not make the investment in meters, well, the flat rate is the only option. So along with this, when people have metered water and their water bill reflects the usage that they use in water, they tend to look much more closely at how much water they're using. And so conservation of our natural resource is an important aspect of this. So being more fair and financial possibility of remuneration toward the water provider are two goals of this bill. And so that's why I put this together to submit to you. I thank you for hearing the bill today, and be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Olson. Questions for Mr. Olson? Senator Berger.
Mr. Olson, it's fair also in that people use water so differently in their homes. I mean, if you have three teenagers, you're going to obviously use a lot more water than one single person. So I think that I'm on your side, in other words. But I you didn't point that out, and that worried me a little bit, because I'm on a flat rate here in Salem at a place where I have, and I think it's fairly inequitable. I see people that have, you know, one person living in a place. But what is the $33? I lost that somehow. Is that a cap?
Okay. Chair Metzger and Senator. The $33 is a threshold set by the PUC. And when I say a threshold, that means that a water system may charge any rate up to $33 without having the customers wage a complaint against the water system for excessive charging. Now, if you go above the $33, then you're at the mercy of the customers. Pardon some of my terms, but the customers may put a complaint into the Public Utility Commission for research. You know, if you're charging more than $33, is this a legitimate charge that you're giving to the customer over $33? The Public Utility Commission has set that level. So I hope I make a plain. Under 33, the customers don't have a right to go to the commission and ask or challenge the water rate. Mm-hmm. Above $33, they can challenge it. And this would set a higher level for metered systems than $33. And so I hope I'm explaining the threshold.
You're explaining it. Mr. Chair, the situation that we live under is a flat rate, and it's the city of Salem has come in now and set a flat rate of, and it changes from $80 to $88 for water and sewer. No one seems to know how they know that. We all have meters, but they don't use the meters. So I'm very interested. You got my attention.
Well, we might get your question answered in a moment.
I might say I've been in the water business for a number of years, and what you brought up was a very good point as far as the amount of water that different people use. A typical question that I get from a brand new family moving into one of our water services is, how much is my water bill going to be? And I tell them, well, you tell me what your living habits are. We all have living habits of different kinds. And you're very correct. Many of our services, we give 3,000 gallons with the minimum price that we charge. I'm talking metered systems now. And we have many accounts who in 12 months of the year never exceed 3,000 gallons. But we also have accounts that can't get down to 3,000 gallons. So it's living habits, and you're very, very wise in observing that. It's living habits, how we live.
Yeah. Questions for Mr. Olson? Okay. Mr. Wilson, PUC, you want to come forward? Give us a little PUC background. You might just stay up there right now, Mr. Olson, just in case there's a question or anything else.
Thank you.
That helps.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Rick Willis with the Public Utility Commission. I really don't have testimony other than to say that commission supports this bill. We certainly encourage sub-metering because it does help with conservation, the issues that Senator Berger and Mr. Olson pointed out. So we are in support of the bill.
Okay. If you could address, I mean, I thought it was interesting what Senator Verger said about, I'm not familiar with that, Salem, because that seems like a much bigger situation, that they have meters, but you say you have a flat rate.
We have meters, and they've gone to a flat rate, and in the city of Salem, we actually pay the park owner, but the park owner pays, supposedly, the city of Salem, and we all have meters, but the meters aren't used. And the flat rate is, and it moves, it's sometimes $80, and then it moved up beyond 80, but it's water and sewer. But there's no way for any individual homeowner to know what they are going to be paying, because we all pay the same. We all pay the same. And obviously, we don't all use the same amount of water and sewer. I mean, there are three of us, and most of the people on my side of my street are individuals. And so I'm not sure of how that works. Maybe I can file the complaint to find out. Could you address that?
Mr. Chair, Senator, I can address it kind of, and I hesitate because we only regulate private water companies. We don't regulate any municipal Salem or any other city. So I'm going to hedge a bit. I don't know what the city of Salem is doing since they don't come under us. But we do know that a number of municipalities combine both the water and sewer. In addition, a number of them use their water service to attach other kinds of fees to help support city services and all. So some of it may be related to that, to the other fees that are attached. Again, private water system, we would have, if they're rate regulated, we would work on their rates, and it would be a set amount. When I say set amount, that's usually, if it's submetered, some kind of base amount that kind of covers the cost of the infrastructure, the pipes, the meters, and then a secondary piece that calculates usage. So the more you use, the more you pay to get to your issue. If you have an individual in a household, shouldn't be paying as much as the next door neighbor with husband, wife, and six kids.
Okay. Senator Jordan.
I'm looking at the statute right now, and I'm trying to figure out, it says the commission shall adopt rules establishing maximum rates for water utilities serving fewer than 500 customers for the purpose of determining blah, blah. Why couldn't the PUC under the current statute, and I'm just asking, why is this even needed? Why couldn't the PUC just do this under the authority already given to the PUC to do it?
Mr. Chair, Senator George, possibly we could. What this is asking for is something that we have not done before, and that is separating the meter from the unmetered. Okay, and I think what the bill is intended to do is encourage the submetering.
Right.
And we have not done that in the past. Do we have the authority now? Possibly. We'd have to probably get our legal beagles to take a look at that and see if under the current statutes that authority is there. But it's always been kind of a flat rate. It applies to all water companies. That was obviously clear and simple for all the companies. They knew what the rate was. This is going a step beyond that, and I think that's why they wanted to put in statute to encourage that additional, a separate threshold.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay. Thank you. Anybody else wish to testify on Senate Bill 623 today? Okay, we'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 623. Mr. Stenberg, you want to tell us about tomorrow?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, today I am prepared, thanks to Aaron Seiler, ran off a copy of tomorrow's agenda. We have three bills on all-terrain vehicle. These will be bills for work session. You've heard them before. Five other bills. It will be a busy day. One on highway use, one on airport tax, two on motorcycles, one on transportation planning. So it's transportation day tomorrow.
Okay. Thank you all. We are adjourned.